This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, October 24th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, a look at how the prescription drugs that we take can wind up in lakes and rivers and streams. Also, our forecast coming up for meteorologist Ed Kieser. First, a look at today's news. The Champaign City Council is endorsing a compromise hike in the city's property tax rate. As AM 580's Jim Meadows reports, it's higher than the current rate, but not as high as in previous years.
For years, Champaign's property tax rate stood at $1.31.2 per $100 assessed valuation. Last year, it went down to $1.26.5. Now the City Council has endorsed setting the target rate at $1.29.4. Councilwoman Deb Finan says it's a good compromise between no tax hike at all and the higher rate that city finance officials recommended,
which will allow for funding of long-deferred needs such as our arterial roads and capital construction that needs to happen within our city, without being a huge leap in the tax rate, which would be a hard burden for the citizens.
Champaign council members said they heard a lot from constituents about the original proposal to raise the tax rate back to $1.31. Some, like real estate agent Debbie Auble, voiced their opposition at last night's study session. Afterward, Auble said the compromise tax increase wasn't any better and that the city should consider revenue sources that don't burden homeowners. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The tax increase coupled with rising assessments would add $47 to the tax bill of a $150,000 house in Champaign. A final city council vote on the property tax rate is due in 2 weeks. Indiana's governor heads to the northern part of the state today to promote his sweeping property tax restructuring plan. The Mitch Daniels administration says the proposal would allow or would lower averaged homeowner bills by about a third. Some replacement revenue would come from raising the state sales tax from 6% to 7%. The plan would cap homeowner property taxes at 1% of a home's assessed value beginning in 2009, with limits of 2% for rental property and 3% for business property. Daniels is proposing an amendment to the Indiana Constitution, so those changes would be harder to undo. The governor's plan would also put limits on local spending, replace elected assessors with appointed ones, and have the state assume all school operating costs. A Champaign man accused of murdering his wife has pleaded not guilty on charges of murder and concealment of a homicidal death. 38-year-old Robert Arnett made his second appearance in Champaign County Court yesterday, the same day that a grand jury returned indictments on both counts. His wife, Naomi Arnett, went missing in late May, and her remains were found in a shallow grave near Sedora September 30th. Arnett remains in the Champaign County Jail on $5 million bond. He'll be back in court in 2 weeks. A second lawsuit has now been filed in an attempt to halt the shipping of nerve agent byproduct from Indiana to Port Arthur, Texas. Environmental groups contend the Army withheld evidence about potentially destroying the VX wastewater at Indiana's Newport Chemical Depot when it announced the material would be shipped to Texas. The director of the Chemical Weapons Working Group, Craig Williams, says the Army chose that option in an attempt to avoid a public comment period. He also charges the Army's private research for using the depot as a contingency plan was done at taxpayer expense. After the group's first lawsuit was filed earlier this year, amid health and safety concerns, the Army voluntarily halted shipments. While Army spokesman Greg Mayhall says he can't comment on pending litigation, he says it's unclear whether shipment to Texas will be brought to a standstill again.
In the past histories, you know, any stoppages in the Army's program have come at our account, have come voluntarily by us while this happens. But it's purely speculative to know if anything down the road is going to result similar to that as has happened in the past.
After a judge dismissed the first suit, shipments of VX wastewater to Port Arthur resumed on August 7th. Mayhall says 1,100 containers, or more than half the 1,200 tons of VX, had now been safely decontaminated. At the current pace, he says the project should be completed by next summer. An entrant into the 15th District Congressional race in Illinois says dealing with Iraq should be Congress's priority. Steve Cox is the first Democrat to say he wants to challenge four-term Republican Tim Johnson. The Urbana resident retired from a 30-year federal career in information technology. Cox says fellow Democrats should speak up louder about leaving Iraqis with the ability to redevelop their own country with international help.
I can understand that, to a certain extent, politics as usual have had to play into how they proceed, but they need to be bolder about addressing the executive and the issue of the war, and how we have placed $500 billion worth of our resources in an effort that should never have occurred.
Cox says he's been interested in politics for years but couldn't run for office as a civil servant. He says he's talked with the Democratic candidate over the past two campaigns. Dr. David Gill decided against running again after the death of his wife. Congressman Johnson is expected to run for a fifth term next year. A new website could help expose a long prevalent practice in Illinois in which politicians award their campaign donors with state business. On the Open Book site, users can track how much money a company or person with a state contract is given in political contributions and to which politician's campaign funds. That sort of information was already available to the public, but Jay Stewart of the Illinois Better Government Association says finding and weeding through it could be tough for an average curious citizen.
But before, it was hard to get a hold of this information unless you're a member of the press or someone who knows their way around state government. Now if you have a computer and a modem, you can get on that website and do it yourself, and it's very easy to use.
Advocates like Stewart say when campaign contributors get government contracts, it creates a conflict of interest that can end up costing taxpayers money. They say it also creates the perception that government is rigged, and that in turn leads to voter apathy. The Illinois House passed a measure that limits the political donations that those with state contracts can make. That legislation is stuck in the Senate. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Less than 10 years ago, the U.S. Geological Survey found household drugs and chemicals in almost every body of water they sampled. Each year since then, at least 20 studies come out showing these chemicals can affect the hormone systems of wildlife, and some studies have begun to look at the effects on humans. From the Environment Report, Kenna Oman says despite all this, little has been done to address the issue.
Every major water body in the United States, whether it's a river, lake, or wetland, probably has at least one scientist keeping an eye on it. Lake Champlain is no exception. This large lake, forming much of the border between Vermont and northern New York, has its share of scientists, and Mary Watson is one of them. Watson's the director of the Rubenstein Ecosystem Science Laboratory in Burlington, Vermont. She's been studying how human pollution and activities impact the lake's fish, birds, and other water wildlife. Watson's been around long enough to see quite a few of the big pollution problems resolved, but you can't help noticing some frustration when she talks about the latest issue.
We're cleaning up our act, at least with PCBs. We're working on mercury, and then there's all this new generation stuff coming along.
This new generation of pollutants includes the active parts of household chemicals and drugs which have the potential to impact the hormone systems in wildlife. They're in detergents, cleaning products, and many types of drugs such as antidepressants, steroids, and even birth control pills. Chris Hornback is with the National Association of Clean Water Agencies.
They're coming from consumer products. In the case of pharmaceuticals, they're coming from drugs that our bodies aren't completely metabolizing, or in some cases from unused pharmaceuticals that are being flushed down the toilet.
And the problem is, once these drugs and chemicals leave our house, many of them aren't filtered out at wastewater treatment plants. Treatment plants were not designed to handle these types of pollutants, so any lake or river which receives treated wastewater can also receive a daily dose of these active chemicals. Because these pollutants can number in the hundreds, just how to study them is under debate. Mary Watson says the old way just doesn't work anymore.
The classic way to examine one of these compounds is just to test it by itself, but the fish aren't exposed to these things by themselves because they swim around in the general milieu of everything that gets dumped out.
But looking at how mixtures of household chemicals and drugs affect fish and other wildlife can bring up more questions than answers. Because of this, Pat Phillips, a hydrologist for the U.S. Geological Survey, says we might want to concentrate on just keeping these pollutants out of the environment.
One of the things that we see is we see mixtures of many different compounds coming into the wastewater treatment plants and coming into the environment. And it's very difficult to figure out what effect these mixtures have. But if we can remove some of them, that makes a lot of sense.
In the past, when the issue was industrial toxins, the solution was to control these toxins at their source. This is because wastewater treatment plants weren't made to deal with industrial toxins in the same way they're not made to deal with household drugs and chemicals. But now, Chris Hornback says controlling this new generation of pollutants at their source just isn't practical.
A lot of the substances that we're talking about now, including pharmaceuticals and other emergent contaminants, are coming from the household. So those sources are much harder to control. You can't permit a household. A wastewater treatment plant can't control what a household discharges. So that's where public outreach and education and pollution prevention efforts come into play.
These efforts are really only starting. Some states have begun pharmaceutical take-back programs to keep people from flushing unused medicines down the drain, but participation is voluntary. Everyone involved agrees that in order to solve this problem, it's going to take people thinking about what they're sending down their household drains. But just how to broach this somewhat private topic is yet another question. For the Environment Report, I'm Kinna Oman.
And the next piece is the spot version of that feature. It comes down in 3, 2, 1.
For close to a decade, scientists have known household chemicals and drugs are making it through wastewater treatment plants and ending up in our lakes and rivers. But few attempts have been made to filter out this household flow of pollutants. This is because there are hundreds of different chemicals that could need treatment, and treatment is expensive. Chris Hornback is with the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. He says the wastewater treatment industry is researching this issue but still hasn't found a solution.
I don't think anyone has yet found the silver bullet treatment that says, you know, this is going to remove all pharmaceuticals or all emerging contaminants.
At this point, the focus is on pharmaceutical take-back programs to keep people from flushing unused medications down the drain. So for now, public awareness and education are the best options out there. For the Environment Report, I'm Kinna Oman.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Let rain revisit much of the area over the next couple of days. The forecast for today, though, mostly sunny in northern and central Illinois. In northern and west central Indiana, cloudy early, then becoming partly sunny. Ed Kieser says in east central Indiana and the south, it'll be cloudy with a few scattered showers. Today's highs will range from 56 in the north to 61 in southwest Illinois, with a high of 60 in Champaign-Urbana. For tonight, clear in the north, in central sections partly cloudy. In the south, cloudy with scattered showers, most numerous after midnight. Lows from 32 degrees in far northwest Illinois, 47 in the south, and around Chicago, 39 in Champaign-Urbana. For tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny in the north, in central sections, increasing clouds with scattered showers arriving during the afternoon. And in the south, cloudy with showers again. The highs from 54 in southern Illinois to near 60 in many northern and eastern locations. For Friday in Champaign-Urbana, clouds and showers on a high of 59, a few lingering showers on Saturday with a high of 58. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, October 24th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.